it down because I'm short. We were wondering back there. It's like, I was looking at the podium last night. It was like up here. I'm like, am I going to even be able to see people over it? So, thank you. I want to thank everybody for having me speak. It's like a real honor for me, but I have to admit, I have been in my head all weekend. You're not supposed to do that, but I was, because my spiritual program is so important to me. If I didn't have it, if I didn't have some sort of spiritual connection, I wouldn't be here today. Goes right in hand in hand, because this program showed me that I could have a God as I understand him. Not something that's been shoved down my throat. Not somebody telling me, you have to believe this. It doesn't matter what's true. You don't have to understand it. Just believe it. I'm not that way. I need to understand what's going on. Okay? So, I came into this program. I'm not going to even go into the addiction. I came into this program dying. I think we all have. You know that feeling. And life is so hard, and I use drugs to hide. I thought drugs were the answer to my problem, and then the answer became the problem. And, you know, sometimes you can have such dumb thoughts. My one thought was, I thought all addicts died in New York on a dirty mattress, and I didn't know how I was going to get to New York. I knew I was dying. But did that make me go and ask for help? No. I needed a crisis to force myself to go to my mom and say, I think I have a drug problem. Well, my butt ended up, sorry, my butt ended up in detox and rehab, and then by the grace of God in a halfway house. It was the last opening for women at this particular halfway house, and if I hadn't gone there, I would not have been able to go home and stay clean. So the halfway house was really important. It took us to a lot of meetings, and there were a lot of good conversations going on there. One of the important conversations, I remember, I can even see myself sitting on the side of a hill with this one guy, and we were talking about who we were in our addiction and how we tried to be different in spite of the drugs, you know? And he said, Iris, you don't have to pretend to be somebody else. You can grow, you can change, you can get better. And that's what I wanted. That was the cornerstone of my recovery. It wasn't just about not using, it was about being a better person. It was being able to face life and not be afraid. It was about being able to be responsible and to be proud of myself, feel good about myself. I've been blessed with spiritual experiences, even though I didn't know they were spiritual experiences. I was at the halfway house one time, and I was facing the same problem I had faced 3 or 4 years earlier, the same exact problem. Everything else was different, but the problem was exactly the same. And while I'm looking at this and realizing it was the same problem, I heard in my head, like somebody whispering in my ear, you're going to do it till you do it right. And I got this picture of this earth with a schoolhouse on it. Oh, thank you. And I thought, oh shit, no more procrastinating, no more putting things on the back burner. I want to deal with this shit and get it over with. I don't want to keep having it beat me over the head. And that became a very important part of my recovery. We went to lots and lots of meetings. I was blessed by going to the first Double Bubble, the first NA meeting in Beaver County. I didn't know it was the first meeting, but it was the first meeting. And I must admit, it wasn't recovery, it was an attraction. I knew it. It was like, okay, well, this is interesting. I'll be back. I got to the halfway house, and a job landed in my lap. And all I needed a car be able to get back and forth to work. I mean, I had somebody driving me, but that was only going to last so long. And so I had this $200, and there was the men's house and there was the women's house. And I was up at the men's house talking about this, and the guy said, oh, we'll take you down to Pittsburgh and get you a good deal. I'm thinking, with $200, Okay, tell you what, let's meet together on Saturday and go find that good deal. So Saturday morning happens and I go running up to the halfway house. It's like, okay, and I get there and nobody's there. Nobody except Joe the cook. And I'm like, even though I knew it was pretty impossible, I was still devastated because, like I said to Joe, what am I going to do? If I don't get a car, I'm going to lose this job and I'm going to have to go back to my home environment. I am not going to stay clean. So, I'm in a free fall, and this guy walks in the men's house store and says, does anybody know somebody who wants to buy a car for $75? Now, for the guys who like to ask me the question, yes, it had an engine. The tires are all different sizes, and it got 8 miles per gallon, but it ran. And for $200, everything was covered. I'm like, whoa, that's special. How lucky am I, right? Not even having any thought about any kind of God or anything, because I think a lot of times I look at God like I look at my parents. They were too busy to deal with me. They had too much going on. I didn't matter. And that's kind of how I saw God. It's like, if there was a God, he didn't give a shit about me. So I thought. So I have my car, I have my job, I get an apartment. I got all the numbers. They say, get numbers. I used to smoke. I used to have all these numbers on cigarette packs. Had no clue who I was calling. But I'd say, hi, I'm Iris. I met you at the meeting. I just thought I'd call and say hi. You give a recovering person this much time to talk, they'll fill it up. I'll tell you what. You don't even have to say anything. Just make that telephone call. And that learning how to use the phone was such an important part of my early recovery. And it just became part of it. It became part of my life. Of course, the car broke down. But my job was real close. And my brother, who's 6 foot tall, lent me his bicycle, right? I had to jump up on this damn thing to be able to ride it. So I'm riding this bike all over Beaver County, but the problem was the front brakes worked and the back brakes didn't. Do you know what happens when the front brakes work? So I thought maybe I'd play it safe. I didn't mean it, but I'd say it anyways. Every time I got on this bike, I said, dear God, please don't let me go flying over the handlebars. I swear, for 6 weeks, every time I got on that bike, that's what I said. And then I was on the other side of town, and there was this gas station that had these things called tools. I hadn't quite gotten acquainted with tools at this point, but I started using them, and it's like, I unwound this one hickey, pulled out the rubber hickey, tightened it back up, abracadabra, the back brakes work. I'm so proud of myself. Okay, so I give the tools back, and I get to the bike, and it's like, thank you, God. I got it now. You know, miracles have something to do with timing, okay? I got it now, and I get on that bike, and I start pedaling home. The bike stopped dead, and I went flying over the handlebars. And I could have sworn I heard God laughing. Yeah, baby, you got it. Good job. You did it. Uh-huh. And then I was, like, so shocked. And I could hear this laughing, and it's like, he is paying attention to me. There is a God, and he is paying attention to me. I was in shock. And, you know, you have things like that. It takes a little bit of time for it to sink in. But it's like, it's real. It's real. That is my second step. Came to believe in a power greater than myself. Now, I think we all want to change one of the steps one way or another. I always wanted to change step two. Came to believe in a power greater than ourselves. Could bring us to sanity, because restore me, I was never sane to begin with. But, you know, it is what it is, so. I was ready, it was over a year. I actually listened to the suggestion about my relationship for the first year, But back then, they didn't tell you what to do with the relationship when you did get in it. So I got in a relationship. And we ended up moving around, like, and we moved down to Wheeling, and I had this 9-passenger station wagon, cost $75, and everybody from Wheeling would pile into my car and we'd go up to Steubenville to an NA meeting, because Wheeling didn't have any NA meetings. And it's like, okay, it's time to start NA meetings here. So we started NA meetings on the island, and it's really special to be part of the growth of NA. It feels good. But of course, things can't be too stable for too long. It's not just part of our DNA or something, I don't know. So what do? We moved to Newcastle. And then I realized it's time to get out of this relationship. It was over, and I ended up moving to Youngstown, Ohio. Now, one of the important things about the program that doesn't seem very important are the sayings. Because they kind of come in when we can't think. So again, the car goes down. Now we're talking a couple years, so I'm doing pretty good with the $75 car. And I had to get to work, and I have to get back, because I'm working at the Youngstown Alcoholic Clinic, and I'm living at a 3-quarter-way house. And I couldn't do it for a week. So I had to think about one day at a time. How am I going to get to work, what am I going to eat, and how am I going to get home? And one day at a time, it worked, so I got my car back. And then my next miracle happened. While working at the Youngstown Alcoholic Clinic, I ran into this guy who was going to be director at the halfway house that I had gone through. Well, that was strange enough, but then all of a sudden, for some reason, this guy hires me as his counselor. I have no counseling experience. I've only been to meetings. But he hires me, and there were some people that were really pissed. And I didn't understand why he hired me, but hey, I got this job, I'm gonna take it. So I come back to La Paz in Beaver County. And there were some, like I said, there were some people, and because they loved it, because these people had degrees and things like that, so, and I, you know, and we could never figure out why I was there. Well, they decided to call the president of the board of directors and tell him, it's wonderful what you're doing with this halfway house, but watch out for Ray and Iris, assuming we had something going on. So the president comes to the halfway house, and we're at the bottom in the basement office, and there's nothing we could do to convince this man we were not having an affair. So we're coming up, and again, it's all in the timing. We're coming up from the basement, and down from the top floor was coming the guy that I was dating for the last 6 months. Tall, dark, and handsome. I haven't had any of those ever since, but I had a tall, dark, and handsome coming down. I turned to the board of directors, and I said, this is the guy I've been dating for the last 6 months. And he could have shook his arm off, I swear, he was so happy. That was the only thing that could have proven that nothing was going on and I could keep this job. And it was through that experience, that timing, that I realized it was God that wanted me to be in that position. And I have worked in the drug and alcohol field ever since. I wasn't looking to be a counselor. I'm not really good at telling people what to do. I am not. Oh well. I had lots of things. While I was at the halfway house, we had this female director later on, and she did something that really irritated me. So we had like 2 buildings, and I'm walking between the buildings, and I'm saying, okay, God, what do I do now? And I heard the words, forgive her. See, I hear voices. They don't tell me to hurt small animals. They just like to piss me off. Forgive her. Okay. So, you know, I just have weird experiences like that, but after, I was just thinking about some of my miracles later on. And I realized, you know, I'm thinking about, I knew I was missing something. I was missing something. I'm having these really special experiences. I'm missing something. And all of a sudden, it dawned on me, I have friends in the invisible. That's what I call it. Some people call it guys, some people call it angels. I don't know. I never met them, never shook anybody's hand. But I was having help in the visible. There's a lot more to life than what we see. And I was starting to begin to trust. When you begin to trust, I mean, it's scary every time. I remember the first time I began to try to trust. It always has to do with cars breaking down. I mean, we have an issue here. And my car broke down as I was going to work. And I thought, instead of getting upset, sit down and let's see what happens. I had so many people stop and see if I needed help. Now, I had AAA, I had somebody coming. I just wasn't going to let myself get upset. But I had people from across the street come over and ask me if I needed help. I had people from the store coming up and ask. I had old people, young people, asking me if I needed help. And I'll tell you what, I was so proud to be part of the human race that day because I saw the good side, and I was incredibly grateful. The thing is that God was preparing me from some other stuff too. I needed to know He was in my corner because I did get into a relationship that was incredibly important to me. This is a guy that had caliber. He was real. He wasn't into playing games. And I saw myself through his eyes. See, we feel good about ourselves coming into the program, and we do the fourth and fifth step, but that's just the beginning, okay? There's still a lot of deep stuff in us. And this guy, because I respected him so much, if he thought I was worthy, then I was worthy. If he thought I deserved attention, then I deserved attention. And that was something I had wanted my whole life, for somebody to really think that I was not special above everybody else, but special to him. But when we went our separate ways, it devastated me. Now, there are definitely some special guys out there. But crying for 3 years over a guy, what I was crying about was that I lost my self-worth. I lost my mirror to my self-worth. And it destroyed me. But the thing is that I depended on the NA saying that nothing is so bad that drugs won't make it worse. And I held on to that saying like nobody's business. I hurt. I had something I had wanted my entire life and it was gone. And nobody was ever gonna love me like that again. Breathe in, breathe out, go to work. Breathe in, breathe out, go home, take care of the kid. After 3 years, I buried it. I buried that pain. I didn't know what else to do with it. It wasn't going away, so I buried it and moved on. After that, my mother passed away. Now, my mother was ready to pass away. She had been ill, she had lost her job because of her illness, her husband had passed away, the kids were all out, she was ready to die. And when she died, I let that pain hurt. I didn't try to bury it. I mean, there was lots and lots of times in the program, you know, they say, go talk to your sponsor. You talk to your sponsor, but you know what, that doesn't always make the pain go away. I remember there were times that I laid on the couch just shaking from pain. Well, I kept on walking around with this pain from my mother saying, this is too much, and nobody understood what I was saying. I didn't understand what I was saying. But I let it hurt. And what happened was, as it was healing, it was making me emotionally stronger. But what happened was, it was triggering that old pain that I had buried. 2 years later, somebody pulled out that old pain. I was back where I was at before with all this pain. But because I had faced that old pain, I was stronger and I could deal with it. I almost had a chance to get into another relationship. And I can still see me driving across the bridge, thinking, I can't wait till he makes me feel good. And I wasn't talking in one way, I was talking, you feel good in here. And it hit me, it's like, I'm looking to have somebody give me what I'm not willing or able to give myself. And so that relationship did not materialize because I wasn't going to go through that pain again. So it's like, I realized I was looking for him to give me my self-worth. Well, how do you get self-worth? When I was working at the halfway house, I thought my job would give me self-worth. My looks would give me self-worth. Anything to give me worth. I mean, I cried 3 years over not having self-worth. It's that important. We talk about drugs and alcohol being a symptom of the disease. And I talked a little bit about this, but I hadn't put the pieces together. And then you have people go from doing drugs to gambling. But gambling is a symptom of the disease. Overeating is a symptom of the disease. All that is a symptom. So what's a disease? The disease, for me, that I've come to realize, is not being in touch with that self-worth. And that self-worth is my direct connection to my higher power. He knows I have worth, but I didn't. So how do I get to that self-worth? I had to look at me through my eyes, not through anybody else's. I had to look at me through my eyes. The speaker was talking about it last night, about how he had all this good stuff going on and he still felt like shit. In looking at me through my eyes, I had to write myself a letter. I'm a writer. I think writing is a wonderful way of dealing with how you're feeling. And so I wrote myself a letter. Dear Pyrus, you're such a fucking disappointment. You couldn't make a good decision if your life depended on it. You are such a loser. You have made so many mistakes. You're never going to get anywhere. Now, at this point, I have 30 years clean. How does somebody with 30 years clean write a letter like that? I had never cleaned out the old shit. See, during our entire lives, life happens to us and it tells us you're not worthy and there's something wrong with you and you know, people ignore you or people make fun of you. And I'm ADHD. People have lots of reasons to make fun of me. And it was all buried. Emotions are an energy. They were all buried in here. And I didn't know how to get them out. By writing that letter, I took a look at myself to see what I really thought of myself. And then I forgave myself. I accepted it and I forgave myself. And I let it go. I'm still Iris. I'm still ADHD. I still make dumb mistakes. But you know what? I let it go. I have learned to let it go. I work with people nowadays, and when I was in that incredible pain, it wasn't a commitment to God or anything special. I just said, I got to find some way to deal with this pain. I found it. I found ways to deal with pain. And I wouldn't have been able to do it if I wasn't led in the right directions, but what I did was, I was at this one class, and one of my traumas, there was a guy at one of the spiritual meetings, one of the camp meetings said, when I see somebody with time, I know they've been through the shit. It's like, thank you. I had 5 major traumas in my recovery. Not to scare you guys, but you can do it. I know you can do it, okay? So, and when somebody triggered one of these, it happened like 20 years ago, and I got pissed off because it's like, why am I still feeling pain about something that happened 20 years ago? Again, I never processed it. I never let it go. So what I did was I put these 5x7, not the 3x5,
5x7 cards.
And I wrote it up. I bitched, I lied, I exaggerated. Whatever I wanted to do, I put on that paper. And I had 5 different cards for the different experiences I had. And then I did something that I never thought was important. I never thought it was worthwhile. See, like I said, I think that energy, emotions are an energy, and when I write, I put that energy on paper and get it out of me. But to truly let it go, I had to burn them. I never did that before. And what happened was that I saw that crap, one by one, turn brown, turn to flame, turn to smoke, and drift away, something was released. And I was able to let go of that pain. So for me, writing and burning is something that I pass on to as many people as I can. When I was in Beaver County, I had a girlfriend who would walk around the circle. And when I was done walking around the circle, I felt like I had a freaking therapy session. You know, when you feel like really satisfied and comfortable, and it's like you let something go, and it's like, what happened? But what I found out is that when you're walking and talking with somebody, there's something called EMDR. Now, I don't know what it is. I don't even know what the letters stand for. But it started with people walking and talking. And your eyes go back and forth, you know, when you're walking along. And in that walking and talking, you're releasing. That's why I felt like I had a therapy session. This is God's natural way of us releasing pain. I told this to one of the girls that I work with. I'm a counselor at a methadone clinic. And I told this to one of the girls. I said, you can even talk to somebody on the phone. So she comes back and she says, I was walking for an hour and a half talking with my friend in Washington. I feel so good. My feet are killing me, but I feel so good. It's like, okay, so it works for other people too. Learning to let go of pain. Because we all, you know, you can talk to your sponsor. I absolutely believe that. But the thing is there's still that residual. What do you do with the rest of it? But what do you do when it's so important for you that you talk and you talk and you talk and you can't let it go? You want it so bad. Write and burn, walk and talk. And then I found out something. When I was like I said, I had wanted to find ways to deal with this pain, so I went and became a Reiki master. But one of the things my teacher taught me was something called emotional freedom technique. God leads me in the right directions every time. And what the emotional freedom technique is tapping on spots on your body while you're focusing on what hurts, and it releases the pain. We need as many tools in our toolbox to deal with pain as possible. If you've been listening to a lot of the leads, you hear a lot of talk about pain. When you get clean, like he said, when you get clean and you take away the drugs and alcohol, you're taking away the symptom, but what about the disease, the pain that covers our self-worth? And the more you get rid of that pain, of whatever it is, you get closer to your own self-worth. I'd like to honestly say that I do not need somebody to make me feel good about me today. I love you, I want to spend time with you, I want to get to know you, but I don't need you to make me feel good. That's the growth that God meant for me to go. And he needs me to share it because there's so much pain out there. I had one girl come to me. She had gotten out of an abusive relationship. And she's like, if you don't learn about how to deal with this pain for yourself, learn about dealing with it for somebody else. Because I know we all sponsor people and they're in so much pain and you want to help them, but do you have the tools? She was destroyed. I never saw somebody jump around on a chair so much. And I listened to her, and I understood her. And then when she was finally able to calm down, she says, you know, I've been trying to talk to somebody about this ever since I got out, and nobody would listen. They'd change the subject. It's because when I'm in pain, your pain hurts me. It triggers me. So if you're in pain, you can't hear somebody else. If you haven't dealt with your own pain, you can't help somebody else deal with their pain. So I was able to listen to her because I knew there was a way through the pain. And then once she was able to get her story out, she was still jumping around a bit, but we did the tapping. And when she left, she could breathe and she could walk without shaking. This is a program where people connect with people. This is a program. There was a meeting I went to that somebody says, I wonder what God means for me to do. And I thought, well, first God means for us to stay clean. Then he means for us to heal. Then he means for us to grow. Now in sharing these tools with other people, somebody says, well, can I talk to my dog when I'm walking? I don't have a dog, and I don't have all the answers. You go walk with your, first walk with a person, and then go walk with your dog, and then you tell me if it works, because I don't have all the answers, but this is a beginning. Go, look for ways to deal with letting things go. And then start feeling good about who you are and what you're doing because you're in recovery and you're connecting with other people. That's spirituality. We all have a spark. And when we connect with that spark, when that self-worth is that spark, then we're connecting with our higher power. The more shit to clean out, that doesn't mean, just because you have a shit doesn't mean God's not active in your life. At least he was in mine with all these freaking miracles, you know. But when I was able to clear out the shit, I was able to connect and hear more from God. So I'm cleaning out this crap, and there was a word that I really hated. Every time I heard it, I just walked the other way. I didn't want to connect with it. I didn't want to understand it. It was one of the fuzzy words to me. You know, if I said apple pie, just know exactly what I'm talking about. Flaky, crispy, gooey, sweet, yeah? You know exactly. But this word was a fuzzy word to me. It was called abandonment. I didn't want to hear about abandonment. I didn't want to talk about abandonment. Leave me alone. 6 times in 2 weeks, I'm hearing the word abandonment. It's like, okay, God, I hear you. I will write about abandonment. I didn't want to write about abandonment. I will write about it. So I sat down with my little pen without a thought in my head, and I started writing about abandonment. Abandonment means you're alone. Abandonment means you'll always be alone. Abandonment means you don't have anybody to turn to when you have a problem. Abandonment, nobody there to celebrate who you are or what you do. I wrote 8 pages about abandonment. Where did it come from? We have a lot of stuff in here. And I worry that when people come into the rooms and we take away their drugs, their alcohol, their whatever, that we're dealing with the pain. And it's important to help people deal with the pain from the get-go. And there's ways to do it that help, that work. Whether it's a walking, talking. You want to talk to your sponsor, do it, but go for a walk. And it takes that tool and makes it work 10 times more. And then if you have a writer, have them write it out and burn it. They do that at rehabs. Didn't sink in to me, but they do that at rehabs. It's a wonderful way to start helping people let that pain go, because we've collected not hundreds of thousands or millions, but billions of ways life tells us we're not worthy. And that's a lie. That's a lie. Because we all have a spark, and we have to clean out the shit so that we can get to that spark. I have a girl, you know, you say, oh, well, what's one spark, you know? I was up at the amphitheater, one of the night meetings. Poor girl in front of me, I kept on taking back. There's a firefly! There's a firefly! The more fireflies, the more beautiful. And we all have the ability to shine. And we have the ability to help other people shine and connect that special place in all of us that's connected to a higher power. And I am forever grateful for this program, for allowing me to understand a God of my understanding. There's rules, okay? For me, at least. One is you're not allowed to be afraid. What? So I'm driving home from work one day. 8 o'clock at night on a Sunday night. I was trying to catch up at the end of the month paperwork. I'm driving up the parkway in Pittsburgh, and my car starts smoking. So I pull behind the cement barrier. Now the real problem is, I didn't have my cell phone, and I didn't see a house in sight. And I'm sitting in my car thinking, okay, God, what are we gonna do now? And I could have gotten real scared because I'm on this road that feels like a million miles from anybody with a car that wasn't going to work. Some asshole the other way goes, move the hood. Duh. Okay. So I go and I lift the hood, and here there's a cut on the top. I'm like, well, that's interesting. So what can I do? I go to, see, one of the rules is you've got to do something. Something, put out some kind of action to help yourself. So I go to the back of the car, and I got this electrical tape. Well, it's better than nothing, I don't know. And I'm walking to the front of the car thinking, so where the hell am I going to get water? You know, I can look under my seat, but I wasn't one to use these a whole lot at that point. So I'm walking, and again, I'm not allowed to be afraid. Just do what you can. So I'm walking to the front of the car, and I look up, and there's this big guy with his 5-gallon jug of water. Honest to God, it's not even an exaggeration. He said, I'm like, and I knew God sent him. And it's like, okay. So I because it's my car, see, guys like to fix things themselves. I got a chance to fix this one. So I'm wrapping the tape, and he sticks the water in it, and I got home. You're not allowed to be afraid, and you have to do something. And the third rule is gratitude. If you're not grateful for what you got, why should God give you any more? Gratitude can lift you above all the craziness. I mean, even when things are bad, you have to practice gratitude. It's like a life jacket that holds you above the choppy water until it calms down. Gratitude changes the whole aspect of your life. The program taught me about a God as I understand him. And I'm so incredibly grateful that I have this program that charges me every time. See, my recovery is also in here. My self-worth is in here. When I go to a meeting, I go to get charged. And this program taught me that I could grow, that I could change, that I could get better. And with the help of you guys and God, I have. And I'm not stopping yet. Thank you.